kiss your lips a thousand times and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how you can lower your risk of diabetes, how you can get your hair back if it's falling out, and one of the primary reasons that it might be thinning or falling, and how we can improve our vascular function with a simple addition to our diet. We have also a lot of ways of reducing cardiovascular disease. I'll share those with you, and more on health and healing. From our environmental segment, investigation confirms widespread fears about fracking. Despite roadblocks by the industry and state officials, well water contamination is found in four states. From Common Dreams, we'll share that with you. A short commentary by John Scales Avery. Are we being driven like cattle? And then in the Sudan, they seize illegal genetically modified soybean shipments. It's very common, these genetically modified shipments. Some were stopped in China. Others are getting through. What's this about? From Matt Tabibi, outrageous HSBC settlement proves that the drug war is a joke, from Truthdig. Why? Well, because they only had to pay a $1.9 billion fine. Now, that may seem like a lot of money, and certainly is, unless you realize, oh, they make that in 5 weeks? Yeah, 5 weeks. Well, how much did they make in the crime? Laundering drug money, where nobody went to jail. About 800 billion, not million, 800 billion. So 800 billion, they pay 1.9 billion. They got to keep 800 billion and got out of jail. What a system. We'll talk about that. Also today, my guest in the second part of our program is Dr. Christopher Busby. He is a professor, a chemical physicist, and we're going to talk about the real threats from Fukushima, both to Americans and to the Japanese public, things you have not heard before. Up to date, as of today, the impact of low-level radiation hitting us and higher levels of radiation. We'll be talking to him from Wales. Let's begin. We need more flavonoids. Now, that's easy to get because there's so many foods that contain flavonoids. Onions are one and also contain sulfur, but berries are good also. Here's why we need to get flavonoids. It can lower your risk of diabetes. According to an article in the current peer-reviewed American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, European researchers have found a lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes among men and women who consumed larger amounts of flavonoids and flavanols. And that was a large study. It was 11,000 people, and it was done over about a 20-year period. So what do we do? Well, it's simple. You simply start having more blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, elderberries, chocolate, green tea. You're getting the proanthocyanins. You're getting all these wonderful flavonoids. And that's what helps you. So we just need more of them. Quote from the study. In this large prospective case cohort study, subjects show support and a protective role for all individual flavanol 3-ol monomers and proanthocyanins. So, in lay language, eat your fruit, have less likelihood of developing type 2 diabetes. One of the reasons many of the people told me at the conclusion of a one-year study where we met every week for three hours, 287 women in the menopausal study, was that their hair stopped falling out and thinning and actually came back in. Now, part of the deal was you could not dye your hair, and you couldn't get into the study with dyed hair, because we also had to measure and photograph the hair of each person to see whether or not new natural color would return. And we couldn't do that if we couldn't see the roots. So we gave a 3-month washout period before the study started so that the people who wanted to be in it could. And a lot of the women found it very difficult or challenging because they had dyed their hair, and almost all of them had gray hair. But they had thinning hair and thinning of the eyebrows and thinning of the fingernails, toenails, fungus under the nails. This is common in many, but not all, people going through menopause. Because menopause is a little tricky, because you have premenopause, which can last up to 8 years, called perimenopause, then menopause, and then you're into postmenopause. In the United States, women suffer tremendously because of how their bodies are responding to the cumulative influence of what they've consumed. One of the very first things that we did in this study is we got people off anything that adversely affected the thyroid gland, including caffeine and coffee. And then we also gave them every day a serving of sea vegetables. So you had to have, you could either have it in a salad, cold, or you could have it in a soup or a dish. And all different kinds of wonderful recipes people came up with and shared. In fact, each week one of the things was bring in your favorite recipe for the week that you've made up. So it was a lot of fun and a lot of creativity in how to make foods that people weren't used to eating something that they could have. Here's what we now know. That when you rebalance your hormones, especially the balance between estrogen and progesterone and testosterone, when you begin to exercise vigorously for an hour a day, and when you when you're conscious of keeping your weight down to its normal level, your thyroid functions better. And then you end up with less likelihood of having an iodine deficiency. So now we know that with a combination of everything, but also making sure they got plenty of good iodine, the hair loss stopped, balding was reversed, hair fall and thinning reversed, so much so that 8 women out of this study who had been completely gray-headed had a full head of natural color hair. And they were extremely happy about that. But also everyone said their hair grew back in, their nails got strong and shiny and pink instead of ridged and discolored. And they had energy. That's the first thing. Every one of the journals, because they also had to keep a daily diary. And by the way, any week that a person came and didn't show their homework and show their diary, they didn't get in. They were out of the study. So we made sure compliance was with everyone. And because otherwise, then you don't have an accurate study. So anyhow, you started to see the people in the journals was energy up, sleeping less, more energy, not tired. Wake up with a bounce, all kinds of wonderful things. So for the other people in this audience, you may not be getting enough iodine. If you don't, you could end up with alopecia. You can end up with androgenic alopecia, anemia, post-pregnancy and menopause depression, hormonal imbalances, and all kinds of problems with your hair, thinning, going bald. Now, I believe that we should be getting, you can get iodine from a baked potato, the skin of the baked potato. And by the way, always oil your potatoes before you cook them, just hand oil them, massage them so it's full. Well, coconut oil, it'll protect the nutrients in the skin from being damaged by the cooking. Same way with rice. Every time I make a pot of rice, I put a tablespoon of coconut oil in the water and I stir it so it lubricates all the different grains so you get more nutrition. And then it doesn't all clump together and stick. So get your iodine. Seaweed, one of the best places in the world to get your iodine. Now, another nutrient that we're not consuming enough of in our society, and we should, are the pulses. If you haven't been down to the Little India in Manhattan, you should. It's down on Lex, around 27th Street, and they have about two blocks of lots of stores, and you walk in and you're just overwhelmed by the enormous influence of smells of herbs you haven't smelled before. And they might have 100 different types of curry powders to select from, 30 different types of cumin, dozens of different pulses and legumes. And one of the most common and popular are lentils. Most people in America don't eat lentils. We should. Here's just one more reason. This is from the University of Manitoba. A doctor, Peter there, said, lentils are key in lowering elevated blood pressure. So if we consume the beans and the peas and the lentils and the chickpeas, and by the way, in the Middle East, chickpeas are very, very common. Hummus is just, you go to Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, they're all very popular, the chickpea dishes. So those are good because those change what happens in your blood vessels, and that can help reduce high blood pressure. So there's also a lot of benefit to your immune system when you consume astragalus. Now, the latest from the Natural Society talks about our immune system. And in Chinese medicine, astragalus and astragalus root has long been used by traditional Chinese medicine practitioners as a general tonic, meaning they use it to strengthen and energize the qi, the overall body life force. You can use it for colds, for upper respiratory tract infections, and to strengthen and regulate the immune system. In fact, it's one of the top herbs used in all of China and has been for a long time. We don't use a lot of it in the United States. Yes, there are people in the health movement who certainly know about astragalus, but the average person doesn't. Here's why you should use astragalus, especially when weather is varying. It stimulates the immune system. It supports your internal organs, including your spleen, your liver, your lungs, your respiratory system, your circulatory, and urinary system. It's one of the best overall body health tonics you can consume. In fact, according to the University of Maryland, their study shows that astragalus is effective in treating the number one cause of death in the United States, heart disease. Additionally, the root has been a sound solution for cancer and diabetes. It has antiviral properties, as well as energy-boosting qualities, and it's an adaptogen. That means, like ginseng, it adapts to support your body in whatever way it needs. It reduces cardiovascular disease. It supports you if you have chronic viral hepatitis. And by the way, congratulations to one of the one-month participants in October. I took a small group of people, 10 people, for 1 month, including a physician and his mother, to see what would happen if in a controlled environment they could only make positive choices: exercise, stress management, medical intervention of a holistic nature, like IV drips, and just got the viral loads and wiped out some very significant viruses. Gone. Good. That made it worthwhile. Now, of course, astragalus is part of that. Astragalus is very strongly antibacterial, especially for the cold and flu. One of the best things you could do if you find yourself starting to come down with a cold or flu, take a 16-ounce glass of warm tea, not hot tea, warm tea. Put 4 bags of green tea in, decaffeinated, and then let it steep for about 20 minutes. Take that out. Squeeze the juice of 2 whole lemons and 1 lime into it. Add a 1/4 teaspoon of bee propolis. It's a little gucky. It's kind of like a black tar, and you got to stir it into it. It's not going to fully dissolve, but it'll get in there. You want that bee propolis. It's one of the best natural antibiotics in the world. Take in a teaspoon of Manuka honey. Pour in 10 drops of wild oregano oil, and also put in 5 drops of colloidal silver, and put in 10 tincture drops of astragalus. You gargle it, swallow it, and throughout the day, you drink that 16 ounces. That will do more for you than anything I know in all of medicine to help you with a cold or flu. Then you have, there are other things you can do, of course, but this is in the, when you first see it coming on. It also lessens asthmatic symptoms. It slows the aging process. It helps treat the kidneys, anemia, lessens allergies. And generally 200 to 500 milligrams of astragalus 3 times a day is where you're going to get your best benefits. And it really works. By the way, has always been in my AIDS protocol. And just for your information, in the last 12 months, I was reviewing, yesterday on my birthday, I reviewed everything that I achieved to help people and to see what I could do more of to help more people with more things, to solve more problems. 16 original in-depth investigative reporting articles were published last year. Many of you probably don't know about them. If you go to the website, progressiveradionetwork.com, you'll see them all. And the latest one was, and not just The Hidden Hand, or by the way, probably the number one article in the world in the last month was the fluoride one. It was on 300,000 plus websites. Millions of people then would have been reading it. So when people get a little discouraged, thinking, well, gee, who are we? We're not the establishment. We don't have the power, the media behind us. Yeah, well, when you get an article on 300,000 websites and you have 2 different specials showing, 3 specials showing on public television, and one of them was shown 1,000 times, 1,022 times this past year in major cities, and you get 4 different books on different, especially bestseller lists throughout the year and are still on, you're reaching people. So never think that you as an individual who has an idea can't get your idea out where it can be heard or read. Never assume the negative. Always project the positive. In any case, one of the latest articles I've just put up there is 115 pages. Now, the actual article is about 8 pages. The rest of it is nothing but footnotes. Now, why would I put 110 pages of footnotes from peer-reviewed literature up there? To show you that in helping people survive AIDS and build their immune system and overcoming viruses and bacterial infections and helping them overcome the conditions that otherwise could kill them, that there's a way of building the immune system naturally. I call it living with AIDS naturally. And I have worked with over 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS, saving many of their lives, reversing their conditions, having it go on Tony Brown's Journal and PBS, having press conferences to bring these people and their doctors and their medical records to the public attention. Not once did the media pay attention to it. It shows you that the game has been rigged for a pharmaceutical approach only. Because if the world knew that we were able to stop the progression of AIDS, reverse it or improve it so people could live long, productive, healthy lives, then this $800 dollar industry and all of its little age group supporters that are part of that, that feed off that, and the doctors for hire, they would be shamed because the truth would come out. The drugs they've been promoting have killed people by the hundreds of thousands. Our approach helps these people. 22 articles. They're all listed up there also. And plus a textbook and 5 documentaries on it. So it's up there. Wild blueberries. That can help improve your vascular system. Wild blueberry polyphenols improve vascular function. This is from Marjorie King from GreenMed Info. The more easily blood flows through your arteries and veins, the less your heart has to work. Now, researchers from England and Germany have proven that less than a cup of wild blueberries can have an almost immediate and long-lasting effect on how well your vascular system is circulating blood. Researchers from the University of Reading and the University of Dusseldorf conducted 2 randomized controlled double-blind crossover studies in healthy men between 18 and 40 years of age. They wanted to determine the impact of various amounts of wild blueberries on cardiovascular function. And so they had them consume these polyphenol-rich, beverages and then have the blueberries. And the results were substantial. And it was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition and made an enormous difference in the vascular health. Well, if you want better vascular health, and who doesn't, then wild blueberries. Where do you get wild blueberries? You won't get them in your supermarket. You can find them fresh frozen in supermarkets. You can find them dried in packages that you can just eat. Those are almost all wild blueberries. One more reason to, consume what nature has provided us. By the way, to finish my thought, why I included 100 pages of footnotes in current peer-reviewed literature is for those who say there's no proof that this will help, or no proof that that herb, or no proof that vitamin D will help a person with AIDS. Oh, yes, these are all articles showing the pure, hard data. Will it open a single mind? No. Will it change any of the apostles of greed who are living through the AIDS myth of pharmaceutical approaches only? No. Will it stop the personal attacks of dysfunctional little groups? No. What will it do then? For those who don't know the truth, it'll give you an opportunity to see there's a natural ways of approaching AIDS. And we've been helping people for decades using it. It's just the latest article. I'm Gary Knoll. Now from our environmental segment, as you know, we are using this program as a platform to challenge anything in the environment that does not honor the environment and the people. Gas hydrofracking dishonors the environment and people. You wouldn't know that from the paid-for scientist from the global warming denialist groups who go on camera and say, there's no proof that gas hydrofracking, is bad. In fact, it's a great natural resource. No, it's not. This is the latest. I'll quote this verbatim from the Associated Press. Quote, the Associated Press has confirmed what residents have long known and the oil and gas industries have sought to hide. The controversial process of hydraulic fracturing, as well as conventional oil and gas drilling, is polluting and contaminating well drinking water supplies. An investigation published, AP reporter Kevin Bigos, drawing upon hundreds of complaints made by residents as well as admissions from state officials and even drilling companies, verifies well water contamination in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, and Texas. The AP article summarizes, quote, Pennsylvania has confirmed at least 106 water well contamination cases since 2005 out of more than 5,000 new wells. There were 5 confirmed cases of water well contamination in the first 9 months of this year alone. And then it goes on to each one of these states. So let's just remember, let Governor Cuomo know we don't want gas hydrofracking in New York State because it will pollute the groundwater. It can contribute to earthquakes. It devalues the property for miles around. It creates blight. And so let them know. Don't stay silent on this. And finally, before we go to a break, this is from Sustainable Pulse. Quote, Sudanese authorities have seized a shipment of genetically modified soybeans at Port Sudan Harbor, stating that it is currently illegal to import genetically modified foodstuffs into the country. It has not been confirmed where the GM food soybeans came from, but according to a Sustainable Pulse source in the country, they are from the United States. This move comes 1 week after the Sudanese Customer Protection Society called the Sudanese government to hold decisions on the issue surrounding genetically modified foodstuffs. And environmentalists, scientists, religious organizations, public interest groups, professional associations, scientists and scientific and government officials have all raised concerns about genetically modified foods in Sudan. They've also criticized agribusiness for pursuing profit without concerns for potential hazards, and the government is hit for failing to exercise adequate regulatory oversight. And then it goes into, this is not uncommon. And yet here in the United States, well, we have soybeans that have been genetically modified, corn, tomatoes, so many foods that you consume are genetically modified. That's why you should buy organic produce only. A short commentary from John Scales Avery from Countercurrents. It's only a page. As we stand in line for security checks at airports, we may have the distinct feeling that we are being herded like cattle. Air travel has changed and has become much less pleasant since the fear of terrorism replaced the fear of communism as the excuse that governments give for diverting colossal sums of money from desperately needed social goals to the bottomless pit of war. Innocent grandmothers and their grandchildren are required to remove their shoes and belts. Everyone is treated like a criminal. It is a humiliating experience. We may well feel like dumb-driven cattle, and the purpose of the charade is not so much to prevent airlines from being sabotaged as it is to keep the idea of terrorism fresh in our minds. Is the threat of terrorism real, or is it like the barking of a dog driving a herd? The threat of climate change is very real indeed. The threat of future global food security is real also. Already 11 million children die every year from malnutrition and poverty-related causes. The threat to human civilization and the biosphere posed by a possible third world war is real. The threat of exhaustion of non-renewable resources and economic collapse is real. The danger associated with an unstable fractional reserve banking system is also real. Besides, these are all real threats to our future. The threat of terrorism is vanishingly small. Millions starve. Millions die yearly from preventable disease. Millions die as a consequence of wars. Compared with these numbers, the total count of terrorist victims is vanishingly small. It is even invisible compared to the number of people killed yearly in automobile accidents. Terrorism is an invented threat. Our military-industrial complex invented it to take the place of the threat of communism after the end of the Cold War. They invented it so that they would be able to continue spending $1,700,000,000,000 a year on armaments, an amount almost too large to imagine. So, the people, the driven cattle, have been made to fear terrorism. How was this done? It was easy after 9/11. Could it be that the purpose of the 9/11 disaster was to make people fear terrorism so they could be more easily manipulated, more easily deprived of their civil liberties? Don't know, but an interesting thought. Also, what concerns a lot of us is if you or I are found guilty of any crime, we're generally punished without any thought of the consequences to us or our families. If you or I were caught laundering money for a single drug dealer of $1,000 in Harlem, we'd go to jail. But if you launder $800 billion in drug money, and you also launder money for terrorists, known terrorists and terrorist organizations, the Justice Department says you're too big to prosecute, so they give you a little slap on the wrist. HSBC, quote, according to Matt Tabibi from Truthdig, British bank HSBC received a settlement deal from Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer that amounts to a slap on the wrist for laundering billions of dollars for Colombian and Mexican drug cartels and violating a host of international banking laws. At Rolling Stone in mid-December, Matt Tabibi called the preferential treatment, quote, the ultimate insult to every ordinary person who's ever had his life altered by a narcotics charge. The $1.9 billion fine amounts to 5 weeks of the bank's income. As New York Times put it, the feds refuse to prosecute bank officials because the corporation is a systemically important institution. Quote, federal and state authorities have chosen not to indict HSBC, the London-based bank, on charges of vast and prolonged money laundering for fear that the criminal prosecution would topple the bank and in the process endanger the financial system. Matt Tabibi responds, quote, it doesn't take a genius to see that the reasoning here is beyond flawed. When you decide not to prosecute bankers for billion-dollar crimes connected to drug dealing and terrorism, it doesn't protect the banking system. It does exactly the opposite. It terrifies investors and depositors everywhere, leaving them with the clear impression that even the most reputable banks may in fact be captured institutions whose senior executives are in the employ of murderers and terrorists. Even more shocking, the Justice Department's response to learning about all this was to do exactly the same that it HSBC executives did in the first place to get themselves in trouble. They took money to look the other way. End quote. So you talk about having two standards. Oh, yeah. Two big standards. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the truth about Fukushima. Peel back all the layers of what the Japanese government and TEPCO, the power utility behind all this, have been trying to cover up. Look beyond the lies of the EPA, the White House, and look at the truth. We'll tell you the truth about the threats, the real threats from Fukushima. Also, just two thoughts. In the New York Times front page, they had two things that caught my attention. First is front page New York Times. The Colorado River drought forces a painful reckoning for states. Remember, I did this program 2 years ago where I said, mark my words, the Colorado River will start losing its snowpack at its resources in the high mountains. That means less water to feed over 35 million Americans their water supply, including in Los Angeles. But people, instead of being conscious, went on to build even more Las Vegas water features and a big water feature in Phoenix. That's dumb. And I said, sooner or later, they will be hit with the reality that they're going to have no water. This is from the New York Times. I'll quote verbatim, quote, Colorado River drought forces a painful reckoning of four states. The sinuous Colorado River and its slew of man-made reservoirs from the Rockies to the southern Arizona area are being sapped by 14 years of drought, nearly unrivaled in 1,250 years. The once broad and blue river has, in many places, dwindled to a murky brown trickle. Reservoirs have shrunk to less than half their capacities. The canyon walls around them ringed with white mineral deposits where water once lapped. Seeking to stretch their allotments of the river, regional water agencies are recycling sewage effluent. That means crap for people to use, and offering rebates to tear up your grass lawns and subsidizing less thirsty appliances from dishwashers to showerheads. But many experts believe the current drought is only the harbinger of a new, drier era in which the Colorado's flow will be substantially and permanently diminished. Faced with this shortage, federal authorities this year will for the first time decrease the amount of water that flows into Lake Mead, the nation's largest reservoir, from Lake Powell, 180 miles upstream. That will reduce even more the level of Lake Mead, a crucial source of water for cities like Las Vegas and Los Angeles, and for millions of acres of farmland. Well, you heard it first here 2 years ago, a year ago, 6 months ago, and three weeks ago. Here's my prediction. So listen up. I predict that 16 states will no longer be sustainable in the near future, not 20 years out, within 3 to 5 years out. I believe that within 20 years, you will no longer be able to live in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, or other communities that depend upon the Colorado. Because the Colorado, because of global warming, because of erratic behavior in the weather, will not have the amount of snow to melt over a long period of time that historically was the case, and as a result, you'll be out of water. I also predict the Great Corn Belt in the United States, the Ocklawa Reservoir, the largest aquifer in the United States, will be so low at that point that you will not be able to sustain 27 cities in the middle six states in the United States. I believe Colorado has had its day. It is over. As Oklahoma, the same. Nevada, dead. So people can say nay. Well, took 2 years. New York Times has caught up. That's not bad for them. That's about right. But we don't have 2 years. This is just for this audience. The places I wouldn't think about moving to, because what you need most is going to be in scarce or non-supply. And you ought to take a ride that I took. Drive from Montana down through Wyoming. Go through New Mexico and Colorado. See how many signs that you see for farmland for sale because the water is dried out in the wells. And they can't afford to go down 1,000 feet because it's $30,000, $40,000. And they never thought it would happen. Talk with ranchers who've had a farm for 120 years in their family, generation after generation. Now it's gone. So that's the reality that we're facing. All the more reason to pay attention to sustainability. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. In a moment, we're going to Dr. Busby to talk about the truth of how severe the damage is to the people of Japan and to the residents of the United States and to the environment of Fukushima. But first, I must address something. We have had many, many complaints from this station and its audience about where's our premiums. Well, many of you are rightly frustrated for not getting your premiums from the last fund drive or the most recent fund drive. I want to assure you that I have done everything in my power to get the station to honor their commitment to you, the listening audience, to no avail. It appears that the station has internal problems, and unfortunately I have no control over those. For this reason, I cannot in good conscience participate in any upcoming fund drives until every outstanding premium has been received by all of you. Rest assured that I will continue to inquire about the status of your premiums and will do anything I can to facilitate the shipment of your premiums. I understand that many of you have lost confidence in the station because of this, but I urge you not to punish me or Christine Blosdell, who was not aware, that they were replaying in the last December fund drive the pitching we were doing from the October fund drive. So all we can do is what I've done. First, I've informed the people at PFW of my concern for the not getting out these premiums in a timely manner. Secondly, I have informed the executive director of Pacifica, Summer Reese, of our concerns. If the station is out of money, then it is the responsibility of Pacifica's national office to pay for these premiums so that you can get them in a timely manner. We now have two cycles, the October fall drive and the current or the last drive in December. So that is my hope. but I understand your frustration, your concern, that if they're going to pay the rent and other expenses and salaries, shouldn't they also make the audience and the payment of their fulfillment of their premiums a top priority? I agree with you on that. Let us hope that this is resolved quickly and you all get your premiums. And thank you for your patience. Now to our guest. Okay, now let's go to my guest. Dr. Christopher Busby is a chemical physicist who has specialized in the adverse effects of low-level ionizing radiation. He is currently the director of Green Audit, the scientific advisor of the Low-Level Radiation Campaign, and a visiting professor at the University of Ulster School of Biochemical Sciences. Earlier, he was a member of the British government's committee examining radiation leaks and was appointed to the British Ministry of Defense's Oversight Committee on Depleted Uranium. He also serves as scientific advisor for UK's Green Party. Nice to have you with us today.
Yeah, hello.
I'm concerned that we have been lied to repeatedly by the Japanese government, by TEPCO, the utility company, and by the United States EPA, and by the State Department concerning the severity of pollution impacting the residents of Japan, the environment of Japan, the water, the underground aquifers, the ocean drift, the air drift, and how this would impact Americans or other people. Could you go through, looking at this island, an island of 127 million, roughly one size the size of the United States. Tokyo, by the way, is one of the largest densely populated cities in the world with 40 million people, and we're told that everything's fine there. And yet I'm hearing from people on the ground that is not the case. The forum is yours. Tell us the truth about what we've been lied about.
Well, the releases from Fukushima to Japan and to the Pacific Ocean were minimized right from the very beginning by all of the people you talked about and mentioned. And let's not leave out the World Health Organization and the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation and the International Atomic Energy Agency and all of these people who, I guess, could be characterized as being in some gigantic mega conspiracy since about 1952, and certainly since 1959, when there was an agreement between the IAEA and the World Health Organization to leave the estimation of harm from radiation to the International Atomic Energy Agency. So this as soon as the accident occurred, this machine moved into action. And it has powerful people at very high levels in government, certainly in the U.S. government. Enough leaked documents have now appeared, which have transcripts of telephone calls between various people in the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission and people in Japan on the ground in Japan. And I myself have been leaked documents that show that the U.S. embassy was measuring radiation in Tokyo on the roof of the embassy in Tokyo right from the very beginning, and the levels were quite significant. So we know that they were lying, and I've written quite extensively about the way in which they were lying, and I was one of the first people to come out right at the very beginning to say that this accident was quite clearly of the same level of magnitude as Chernobyl, and probably, in terms of health effects, more dangerous because the population density was much greater. And since then, I've been able to calculate roughly what the health effects will be. The problem is it's not only cancer. It will be across the board. We know from the studies of people after Chernobyl that we looked at, my colleagues and I looked at after Chernobyl in Belarus and the Russian Federation and in the Ukraine, that in fact radiation releases from this kind of accident impact on the health of people across the board. So you get increases in heart disease, you get reduction in birth rates, you get increased miscarriages, you get increase in the rates of congenital defects in children, all of the cancers, of course. But then if you die from a heart attack at the age of 30, then you don't go on to get cancer later on. So generally, what we're going to see in Japan is going to be a crash in the health of the population, and not just around Fukushima at 200 kilometers, but actually down into Tokyo itself. And I've been looking at some figures for Tokyo, and I've been able to certainly convince myself, and I'll be writing a paper about this, that there was a significant impact on infant mortality and perinatal mortality in Tokyo. So these effects are quite real, and they will continue, of course, because the health, as in Belarus, it takes a year or so for it to kick in seriously, and then all these effects cut in, and then the population just goes down. So you get more deaths and fewer births, and ultimately that, of course, wipes out your population, because if you don't get replacement in terms of your population, there is no population.
How bad is it as far as the comparison with Chernobyl?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's approximately the same level of accident as Chernobyl, but the population density is much greater. So in the one calculation that I did publish at the conference in Berlin shortly after the it was in May 2011, that there would be about 400,000 extra cancers in the 200-kilometer radius. But that's in a 10 million population, and that's over 50 years. But I didn't bring in any of the non-cancer effects, which there are going to be many. So yes, it's going to be a sort of population collapse affair in terms of even what's come out of Fukushima at the moment, and of course it's continuing to release material to the ocean, and that's going to be picked up and moved all up and down the coast of Japan. And sea-to-land transfer will bring that stuff back ashore, and that will make it much more dangerous to live near the sea, within about 1 kilometer. We've done studies in the Baltic Sea and in the Irish Sea, where there has been contamination of the intertidal sediment, and we've been able to show that there's a significant effect in the first kilometer. But it seems that if you get inside 5 kilometers away from the sea, that the effect falls right off. So, but the trouble is, of course, you know, they're very big populations near the sea, because everybody wants to live near the sea, and that's where the big towns are. So it's going to be quite bad.
Dr. Busby, does it concern you that the exclusion zone is so small? It's only 12 miles radius, and much of it's ocean, whereas the exclusion zone for Chernobyl was roughly 1,000 square miles. And also, most of the power plants use just uranium. However, Fukushima's Unit Number 3 reactor used MOX fuel, a mixture of plutonium with uranium, in its fuel rods. And plutonium-239 has a half-life of 240,000 years. So compared to Chernobyl, then why should we be more concerned with the toxicity from Fukushima?
Well, there's always plutonium in a reactor. It's produced by the neutron irradiation of uranium. So even if it wasn't MOX fuel, you would still have plutonium present. And in fact, there was quite a lot of plutonium spread from the Chernobyl accident as well. I mean, we've got maps of plutonium levels around the Chernobyl accident. As far as your question about the exclusion zone is concerned, I mean, to be honest, it's really silly to have an exclusion zone that is a radial zone. I mean, it's daft, because in fact, what you're concerned about is the communication of harm to people who live in areas of high contamination, and so you shouldn't be looking at just saying drawing a 12 mile radius around it and saying everybody inside that radius has to move out of it, because in fact, as we know from many aerial surveys of radioactivity and measurements on the ground and measurements of radioactivity using Geiger counters and so forth, the very large swathe of radioactivity went northwest, really quite some way northwest, you know, like 50 miles northwest. So the exclusion should always have been done on the basis of the concentrations of radionuclides on the ground. So that in itself is absurd. But the real problem with all of this is that somehow the world has been conned into believing in this concept of dose. So you go along and wave a Geiger counter around and you say, oh, right, the dose is so many millisieverts per year, and since natural background is 2 millisieverts per year, we can compare it to natural background. And that is absolutely a con, because that is only about external radiation, whereas in the case of Chernobyl and Fukushima and a whole swathe of other similar situations, What we're really concerned about is internal radiation. It's the fact that people have inhaled particles of uranium, particles of plutonium, nanoparticles, sometimes so small that they can just pass straight through the skin. And those are the things that are going to get you. And you cannot characterize that kind of exposure in terms of absorbed dose. Absorbed dose is only of any use when you're considering X-rays or background radiation from gamma rays, or maybe those people in Hiroshima who were exposed to an enormously high dose from the gamma rays from the bomb. But it now seems in any case that most of the cancers in Hiroshima were in people who were rained on by the black rain, which was rain containing uranium oxide particles. So again, we're talking about internal and external radiation. And that's the real message to the planet there.
I need one final short answer before we finish our program. Having done a lot of the original work of reviewing 5,000 articles done in Slavic on the long-term impact of Chernobyl, which ended up being nearly a million deaths, how do you see this coming out over the future of such a densely populated area?
Well, we know what's going to happen because we have seen the whole thing happen before. After Chernobyl, we will see a collapse in the population dynamics. You will see a loss of birth, loss of fertility, and increase in death rates. And then there will be not enough children born to recreate the population, which will then just slowly dwindle and disappear.
I appreciate very much you sharing these insights with us, Dr. Christopher Busby. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot.
We'll keep you up to date. We're out of time. I just want to mention to our KPFK listeners, just to give you an idea, please stop calling our office. When we found out today, just today, I was told 8,259 different premium products they forgot, they overlooked. They just discovered this months later and just informed us this today, just for KPFK. We'll do our best to get these DVDs and others out to you. It'll probably take 2 months, and that's what I'm talking about, 8,259. So when I say that we're besieged with calls, let's just make honoring the audience and the premium givers a top priority. Have a nice day. Luann Panessi for a minute before we go to you, Trice Lita. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Hi. I just wanted to make a quick announcement before we hear from you, Trice. I had three cancellations for our retreat coming up on January 19th. I have three slots that just opened up, and I did have a waiting list, and we put some other people in. But if anyone is interested in coming to for their premium for WBAI to come to the retreat, January 19th through the 25th. It's coming right up. Give me a call. I'm at 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. I do have to interview everybody. And if you're interested, give me a call.
Good. It's going to be a great opportunity. By the way, I had a conversation today with one of the people who was at the last retreat through the New York office. And they say they have made a whole lifestyle change. They're no longer in toxic work. They're living a healthy life, happy life, and have overcome some major physical problems, and we're happy to hear that. So if you want to de-stress, detox, rejuvenate, rebalance, and do it in a positive environment, join us in 2 weeks from now when we take it on for a week. Give Luann a call. Give your number, Luann.
Sure, 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Thanks. Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Luann, if you're there. Today being Tuesday, we debut for 2014, our first edition of Open Forum.
Excellent.
Where listeners take the conversation wherever they want it to go.
Right now, here we go.